Hey, welcome back to the second podcast of Mock Madness. Your host, Michael Mock. So we got a special guest on here today, Travis Sacker. He is the assistant head pro at Hamilton Mill Golf Course, and his Instagram is Stay True Golf. Is that it?
Stay True Golf.
Okay, well, so today we're going to do a little bit of Q&A. So let's just kind of dive on in. You ready?
Sure, let's get going.
Okay, so well, first of all, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, Travis. All
right, so my name is Travis Sacker. I'm assistant professional at Hamilton Mill. I'm 23. I'm originally from New York. I've been working in golf for 10 years. Did some other things. I worked in journalism for a bit. I studied music for a while, so I've done a few different things, but now it's all golf, working every day. I have a dog named Sadie. She's an 8-year-old beagle from Michigan. I have a girlfriend named Julie. She's a preschool teacher. She's amazing. Right now, all I'm trying to do is work as much as I can, gain the experience that I need to move up my industry.
Yeah. And, so you said you're from New York, right?
Yes, I'm originally from New York.
Nice. Okay. And golf. What? So we're here in Georgia and you moved down here. What do you like the golf better up there or do you like golf more in Georgia?
So it's different. One thing I like about here is you can golf year round. My season would go pretty much from March to Halloween, give or take. Here it's year round. I've worked at some pretty nice clubs. I've played some nice golf, but you can find good golf wherever you go. I think Georgia and New York are actually two of the top golf states. I'd say them two, Florida, California, and Texas, probably the two best golf states in the country. Mm-hmm. And one thing that you'll see in my industry a lot is guys, especially my age and younger, will move around a lot for a few reasons. One, weather. Two, new opportunities, obviously. Three is... a lot of the positions are the same. So, for instance, you work in sprint, right? You can do your job at a sprint store, give or take, somewhere else in the country. Yeah. You know, it's the same kind of format. Yeah. You know, being a professional kind of is the same thing. Different club, same shit, different place. Another reason that pros move a lot is because you know it's hard to move up to go from assistant to head pro. That could take a couple years. It could take 25 years to get your opportunity.
So, sorry to interrupt you, but like, how do you wrap your mindset around that as far as just like knowing that you're going to be moving a lot? I mean, you move from New York to Georgia.
When people ask me that question, I always say like, it's kind of relieving knowing that you're not tied to this one place for this one industry. So for instance, I'm from just north of New York City. Most of my friends live or work in around the city. What they do revolves around a big media, art, cultural, historical business center, right? I don't have that. I need grass and holes in the ground. That can be anywhere. You'll find a golf course anywhere, and they're just as good, and they operate the same way. So I kind of actually like that. Like, it's relieving to know if I, you know, was intrigued living, let's say, in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. For instance, there's 3-Peak Golf Ranch. Course is phenomenal, it's beautiful. I worked for a member, that's one of their members there. You know, just meeting people who also travel around the country and show you these new opportunities, you can take it. Let's say I want to go out to Scottsdale. I have a buddy working at TBC. I want to move down to Florida. I got, you know.
How'd you get all those connections, man?
So I started the golf management program in college and I met a lot of now young pros living around the country. The other way of meeting connections besides working or knowing professionals is growing relations with your members. Now, if you got, as you know, in the private golf sphere, a lot of golf members are members of multiple golf clubs.
Usually
those golf clubs can be on opposite sides of the country. So let's say we had a member, Mr. Waterman. He was a member of Bedford Golf and Tennis Club in New York. He would spend the falls and the springs there. The summer, he'd go out to get Jackson, Wyoming, a member of 3-Peak Ranch.
Yeah.
I had another member, Bill Folk. He was a member of Bedford Golf Tennis Club. He made his fortune by investing into Wawa.
Oh, wow.
He invested into Wawa like 34 years ago, whenever they got there. Yeah. Now he's retired, obviously. Spends his summers out in Maine on a beautiful course out there. a great way to meet or to get opportunities in this network is to kind of get a recommendation from a member. Because if you're trying to be in a private club, no pull is stronger than the professional and the member, right? Okay. So that's kind of what I've noticed.
So real quick, yeah. What's your biggest, like, as far as you, going into networking a little bit?
Yeah.
So as far as, like, what's your approach as far as when you're going into networking? Like, as far as, like, how are you approaching it? And necessarily, are you necessarily out to, I don't know, like, just steps? Do you have a game plan? Or are you just kind of winging it? What's sure. your head thought
so,
process?
Without trying to sound too conceited, I almost like to consider myself as a modest person. I rarely will talk about myself outside of an interview like this. So when I'm working, I remember I'm always the employee. No matter my position, I'm always there to serve them to make sure their time is the
That's
best.
A good point. You got to realize when you're in the network, right. you're there to serve.
So my best way to get into the network, because I'm not the best schnoozer, I can't talk a big game. That's okay. My career isn't built on playing accomplishments, right?
Yeah.
I worked in the industry. I wasn't necessarily a player. So instead of talking about what a tournament I played, I want to give them their ultimate service. Now, whatever that is varies per person. And I've noticed if I can give the service that I can tell they're looking for, they'll appreciate time with me more. And the more I can get them talking, the better it is for me. I want the member to feel comfortable with me as a friendly face. Every time they walk through that door, they're excited to see me and tell me about their day.
So you're going after them instead of what do they need.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I'd rather, and if it doesn't lead me anywhere, that's okay. I still more so care about making sure in the moment every member is adhered to. And that's kind of my position because in essence, I'm giving high-end professional private customers.
You know, you actually make a pretty good point as far as when I sit there and I go out and network to people, I've had pretty much the same approach. Now,
right.
mine's on the business side.
Sure.
But it's you know, a lot of sometimes you find out people when they go out and network, you know, they look at somebody and say, okay, what can they do for me?
Right.
When it's actually... When you actually go out there, yeah, it should be what can I do for them?
And that's what I've noticed. And again, I'm not saying that's the right or wrong way. That is what fits my strengths best.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's
what
I say to
yeah.
that. And if you were gonna ask me, you know, how can you build your lessons? No, I'm always trying to give golf tips here and there. I never want to overstep it. I've found my best way to gain lessons is the gradual approach. I get a couple people in the beginning who just needed lessons. They didn't care who was. I took all of my time on my first few students. They were all great successes to an extent. And what they did is what I didn't realize. They spread the word more than I could.
Gotcha.
I'm now getting lessons. I'm getting guys I teach go out in the mornings with their Saturday group, shooting 6 strokes better than they shot last week, and their playing partners are coming and asking for lessons.
Nice.
Because all around, they're saying, this is what we're working on. And
yeah.
what they can do before they even meet me now is explain to their partners what you're going to be going in for. Now, a lot of instructors will teach a scientific golf swing, which I respect and a point I want to be one day. Because I am also an assistant, I don't just teach. I don't have as much time to break down the golf swings. What I can do is make them enjoy their time, their course more, and keep in a positive mindset.
That's
I take my students on the golf course for a lot of the time, and what they're saying is all he's doing is giving you that last thought before you swing. Now, obviously, we're going to swing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not skipping over the smart swing, but I'm helping them go on the golf course, and all they do is play better than last time. To win their game, right?
A lot of people are saying, you know,
yeah.
I've played golf for a long time, which, by the way, guys, he's amazing at giving golf lessons. He's given me a few lessons. He's taken a few strokes off my golf game, so, you know, highly recommend him. But as far as what you're kind of talking into, there is kind of the mental aspect,
right.
too. I mean, they say that golf is, I don't know the percentage, as far as mainly mental.
90%
mental.
So this is what I'll say. Anyone can get a good or bad swing. There are good and bad swings. There are swings with a great one. No one will ever play to their potential with a weak or negative mindset. Everyone's potential
that goes
is
in anything. That's a real
sure.
good point.
And it, especially 4.5 hours in 100-degree heat out on the golf course, hitting a tiny ball into a tiny hole.
Yeah.
You need to finish those 18 holes. And that is my biggest brain killer with students is, like, I don't care if you have 16 horrible holes.
Yeah.
Finish strong.
Yeah.
Because if you go birdie, birdie, and you take two strokes off, well, there's your 85 opposed to 87, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who cares if you bogeyed the first hole? You'll finish, walk in the bar, have a beer, and say I birdied 18.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. That's a real good point that you're making. As far as not only that, but as far as, you know, as you're approaching and going through life lessons and all that kind
right.
of stuff, a lot of people necessarily look at the short-term game. So, like, what you're talking about, per hole, oh, I've messed up on
sure.
this hole. I got a bogey, and then they try to compensate for it. When necessarily in the grand scheme of things, it's a long-term game, and you
right.
just got to keep going after that. So,
sure,
yeah.
definitely. And so that's what I'd say how I'm getting my network right now for lessons is my students playing well and vouching for me. My goal eventually, after being head pro, just be a full-time instructor, have a studio, my own academy, whatever it is,
yeah.
and teach the game of golf. And so my way of getting there is, again, gradually absorbing everything I hear from those in the industry ahead of me. Like anything, listen to those ahead of you, pick their brains, ask questions. Even if I hear something that I think or might know is incorrect, test it, right? Figure out why are they saying that. Because that's how I learned some of my things. Like, I will hear something, research it, watch a video on it, and then try it on a student the next day. Sometimes it's great. Sometimes it was the worst decision
yeah.
I could have ever thought.
You know,
of.
I actually did that within Sprint a lot.
Right, yeah.
You know, as far as with what I work, and I tell my employees it's pretty much the same thing. Like, look, we don't know if this is going to work, but
right.
let's just go out and try it
right.
and see if it does work. And even if you do sit there and just get a small bump, like as far as small bump up,
right.
at least you got that small bump.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so I can fully see what you're saying. Just go out, try different things, because you never know what's going to work.
Yeah.
You know, so...
That's what I'd say. And I mean, besides that, what I'm noticing with teaching too is every student is so unbelievably different. There's no plan with my students. My students are like, all right, I got the three package. What are we doing first? And I'm like, we're going to go out. You're going to hit a few putts, hit a few balls, hit a drive, hit a chip. And then we'll be able to figure out what you need most.
Yeah.
I don't want you to have a specific plan, and I don't mean, and if you do something really well, that doesn't mean that's not what we're working on.
Yeah.
Sometimes working on the best part of your game takes you to the next level.
Yeah.
Because you'd be surprised, like, for instance, I always felt the best part of my game was when I'm hitting greens. I can get the ball close to the hole. When I stop practicing, dialing in my irons, I'll play horrible. No matter how well I'm driving it, no matter how well I'm putting or chipping, I'm never going to get to that next level unless my best part of my game isn't at its best. So, for instance, Tiger Woods won the Masters. Tiger Woods is known for hitting greens and hitting good iron shots.
Yeah.
Who led the field in greens regulation during the Masters?
Which, by the way, I called that.
Tiger Woods.
I called it.
That's things. Those are kind of also why I like the name Stay True Golf. To in complete disclosure, Stay True is a song by a band I like about other bands I like. that is tattooed on my arm.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So Stay True was a song written by a punk band called Thursday, that doesn't matter, that was at the end of their career, and they're telling other bands to stay true to themselves. Don't sell out, and don't listen to people that are trying to hurt you in the long run. I took that as, okay, I was 19 when I got the tattoo, and I was like, I had a lot of stuff in my life. My dad was struggling with health. I was living in college here in the States on your own. And I'm like, I needed to remember what I was doing and who I was. And that was a little way of reminding myself that just be yourself. And that's all that matters. You can never be more than you are. I'm not, like I said, if I bullshit you, it will be easy to see through my bullshit.
Yeah.
That's,
especially nowadays with everything that's going on.
Exactly.
I mean, it's, you're as far as like transparency is becoming more and more and more.
more.
All I have to do is say my name, and you can spend a few hours researching in the internet and know everything about me that's on the internet.
Yeah.
You might, for instance, I wrote for my paper in college. I wrote about drinking in college. I also teach golf. You can find out me teaching golf. You can find all the things put together and make your own things that you want to think about me.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was thinking of the name, I was like, well, it's already kind of tattooed on me. It has a good meaning, regardless of what the actual meaning is.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that you hear and will keep a positive mindset, because I didn't want what I'm called Travis Sacker Golf or Travis Sacker Golf Academy. It's not about me. It is about those who are going to gain the knowledge to help them.
It's very selfless.
That's kind of, again, I can, when I'm sitting on the couch after work, I like to joke and be conceited and joke, my life is horrible sometimes. But in the end, none of it's for me.
You get to go out and play golf, bro.
The best feeling I have in the day is when I walk on the range and I help someone walk off that range feeling awesome about their golf game. That is why I do it. Yes, I do it for the money because something pays bills. If I was doing it for the money, I would have wanted to get a finance degree and work on Wall Street. I already live there. Why would I move away from it?
Yeah. True. Good point.
Right. So that's not why I do it. And that's kind of, in the end, what Stay True means to me.
Okay.
That's why I use name. Plus, STG has a nice ring to it.
STG, yeah. It's pretty good. You actually bring a good point as far as, like, you know, when you sat there and you were talking about it, at the end of the day, it's all about them.
Right.
You know, kind of backtracking a little bit about it.
Sure.
Something that I do as far as, you know, I'm big in leadership right now as far as management. And one thing that I see sometimes with as young managers, young leaders, when they get this leadership role or necessarily management role, okay, all of a sudden they think that their title gives them necessarily the leadership.
Right.
Which is not true at all. And the mindset that you got, like a true leader, one thing I've learned, so I've been studying leadership for the past, 5 years every day, kind of going into that. But the biggest thing that I had to wrap my head around, okay, and it's kind of funny, I think it's like the past 2 weeks, I've been telling some people about this, and not only that, I heard, Gary Vee kind of drop it up as far as one of his podcast, probably I think about a month ago, was if you are a true leader, okay, the biggest thing that you are got to accept is that, like, let's just say for me, as far as a manager and an employee point of view, the employees don't work for me. I work for the employees. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, at the end of the day, it is my job to sit there and put them in the best, in the best position for them to succeed.
Right.
Okay, same thing can go with golf. Like, far as, when you're coaching, you want to set them up the best to hit the green or make the putt or something like that. So, that's kind of, at the end of the day, and, sometimes it really, as far as especially, a day for me today, today really sucked. But, at the end of the day, because you got to put yourself in the back seat almost sometimes,
right.
And really get to know these employees. Each employee is different.
Right.
You lead them in a different way.
Right.
And at the end of the day, even though necessarily especially me doing a sprint, and I got these, young 20-year-olds, 21, 22, and they're, young kids that are selling cell phones.
Right.
Like, I know at the end of the day that, their goal is not to be, a top, or their short-term goal may be, become a top seller. But as far as their overall lifetime goal,
something
bigger. It's going to be something bigger.
Right.
So it's like my job as a leader is to sit there and say, okay, well, what do they want, okay, in life, and what do I have to offer them to get them to their goal?
Right.
You know what I mean? And so that's kind of the daily battles that I face as far as, my management, and kind of, you can probably relate as far as being on
a
golf course.
I have a couple things. I want to take it a little bit away from golf, because what you said is something that I like to believe in that I try to read to my staff, because I was, now I manage, and even if I was a manager, let's say outside production, there's always pros ahead of me. Now, if you look, let's say football and basketball, look at chain of success. If I was to say the two, let's say, successful, longest tenured coaches in basketball for right now, Bill Belichick, Greg Popovich.
Yeah.
Both have had countless assistants mm-hmm. now or were head coaches.
Yeah.
Were they successful? Always no, because really freaking hard to win professional sports.
Yeah.
Who did they come from? Bill Parcells, and I totally forgot who Greg Popovich came from, but he was somewhat important.
Nick Saban is a good one.
Nick Saban's a good one as well, right. The best people at their positions at one point in time learned from someone ahead of them.
Mm-hmm.
Usually they were able to succeed on their own leading because their manager boss let them lead.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Belichick ran the 80s Giants defense, the 90s Giants defense. Bill Parcells was the head coach, right?
Mm-hmm.
You look at these professional coaches now that are in the NBA, James Borrego, Brown, the coach of the 76ers, they were coordinators under Popovich. They were allowed to lead. When I worked for my last head pro, Steve Dugan, one of the best professionals that I worked with, he allowed me to work my own way, right?
That's empowerment.
Right.
Like,
he's like,
huge.
This is what we expect.
Yeah.
You now figure out the best way to do it. And I did. Did I get guidance from that? Sure. Did I get reamed out a couple times? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean it wasn't to me. For instance, like, this is a while ago, what we had a few golf carts plugging in. One night before an outing, one golf cart was left unplugged. What couldn't have not even been me, but because I was responsible that day to make sure the carts were plugged in, I was spoken to.
Got it.
Now, if you checked the camera, probably was another guy. Who cares? It was my fault because he's like, you were leading. It is on you.
Correct.
He said, because when you're in this position, all of you guys' work comes back to me.
Mm-hmm.
And one day that's you, you're going to want to make sure it's done correct.
Yeah, my dad taught me this. So I played quarterback when I was younger.
Yeah.
And the biggest lesson, now I don't know what age it was, where it got ingrained in me, but I think it was one of my second year of playing quarterback. So I was probably, I don't know, 10, 11. Okay. I started playing at a young age. So I'll never forget. I lost a football game and my dad came up to me and he goes, let me teach you a lesson. Okay. As a leader. Okay. When you lose as a leader, okay, it is your fault. Okay, because you are the leader. When you win as a leader, it is all of them.
Right.
It is all your teammates. Okay. And as far as, like, you know, some young leaders out there, that is a very hard concept to grasp.
Yeah.
Because you get zero self-gratification.
Right.
Zero. And that's the thing, as far as, like, you got to realize self-gratification, you know, has got to come within.
Yeah.
It has to. As far as, you know, at the end of the day, you sit there, you sit down, and you ask that one question yourself, did I give it everything that I had today? And if you can honestly answer that, I mean, then you should be 100% fine.
Right.
You know, so, but as far as one thing within, as far as young leaders out there, I mean, that would probably be the number one thing as far as, so we actually had pretty two big takeaways.
Yeah.
You know,
my dad actually had a similar story on that. He said when I was in there playing football, and, you know, I think, I don't remember how it came up. We were talking about linemen and we're talking about, you know, I was probably saying, like, you know, the quarterbacks all the credit, gets all the credit. They always win MVPs. My dad goes, when that quarterback wins MVPs, he takes his NFL offensive line out to dinner.
Yeah.
They protected him the entire year.
Yeah. You're exactly right.
And he's like, when they lose, that's why the quarterback loses his job.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. I mean, same thing with coaches and point guards in basketball. You know, who is faulted? The point guard that turned the ball over. Now, if he gets the assist, the game-winning shot, the guy who shot it gets the credit.
Mm-hmm.
Team wins, coach gets the credit. They lose, coach's fault.
Yeah.
Those in leading are responsible.
Yeah.
And that's, like, what I've always tried for. I like to lead. I like to be in charge. I like to be out things to do. I like to empower my staff to feel like what they're doing matters. because I felt like what I was doing mattered when I was their staff.
Here's something crazy that I heard on Squat Box. I think it was like 2 weeks ago.
What's Squat Box?
Squat Box is it's on CNBC. Okay. It's like they talk about the stock market.
Okay.
A bunch of stuff like that. But it was crazy, this stat, that millennials now, okay, and you know, we're millennials, they would rather have a good work environment
right.
than necessarily the higher salary. And the good work environment necessarily goes into empowerment.
Right.
You know, because like especially nowadays, people want to feel that empowerment.
Sure.
And so as a leader, you know, you got to empower. Now there's a difference between empowering and micromanaging.
Right.
Okay, that is totally different.
Right.
You know, so as far as, you know, when I sit there and I go out and empower, I know 100%, especially if it's the first time I'm empowering somebody, they're going to mess up.
Yes.
I mean, it is, and you can't have that mindset, especially as a leader, okay, or a manager, or however you, if you're putting in a role of like leader, not necessarily lead, of power, that's probably not the best word, but still, you got to know that they're going to mess up. And you can't have that mindset of, well, you know what? I want it done right. I'm going to go do it. Because you're not growing anybody right. at that point. And you're not empowering. And you'll lose the team
right.
faster than you will gain what right. you want.
And what I've noticed too, spending on now being a leader, is you envision something a certain way. Now, you have to allow yourself, when you empower someone to do a task, job, whatever it is, to let them do it, see the results, because you might find out that was really good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and that's what I like seeing. If I let my staff run something that I may be responsible for, I'm like, wow, I didn't even think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, we have this girl, Tabitha, who works in the golf shop. She doesn't know anything about golf, but she knows a lot about fashion. And boy, has she made some great setups in the shop. You know
great.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Things like that, like things yeah. that I wouldn't have excelled in to a different level that someone else can.
Yeah,
that's what I'm learning too. Like, you want to almost specialize in your staff, right? Like,
yeah.
like, I think it's incredibly important to have an IT guy on your staff, wherever your job is, right? Someone that can get in that computer and fix it, get it going. You want a social media person, you know, you want someone that is very good with grammar. Another one that's looked over. You always mm-hmm. want to have that as well. I'm learning that.
Yeah.
Like, you want to surround yourself with maybe the main goal, golf, phones, media, that's
mm-hmm.
not their best at, but the skill that goes with it. And that's what you need,
yeah.
Which is cool. I have one more thing to say, but I can't remember. So you keep talking because you're in charge.
No, you're good, man. Well, we're actually kind of all wrapped up on time.
Yeah.
So, but man, I definitely really appreciate that. I mean, we definitely got a lot of good takeaways here that we just talked about. But hope you still enjoy Georgia and enjoy the golf here. If you stay here for a while. And guys, again, if you're looking for a great pro that is very good at coaching you from the ground up, all right, come see this guy at Hamilton Mill. And what's the name of the Instagram account again?
Stay True Golf.
Stay True. And stay true to yourself, guys. I mean, really. That's actually a perfect name, you know. And
that doesn't mean you can't grow. You just always remember who you are, because that is, in essence, if you get out of yourself and you start bullshitting, it comes back to bite you.
Yeah. And
don't pop that bubble around you.
Mm-hmm.
You can expand it. Don't pop it.
Good. Very nice. Well, that ends the second episode, second podcast of Mock Madness. So I hope you guys enjoyed this one. And who knows who we'll bring on next. But you guys have a great one. All right.